Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the National MS Society's conference on Should I Work From Home or Start My Own Business? Your host, Barbara McKeon, will now begin.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good evening, everyone. As Jeremy said, my name is Barbara McKeon, and I am the Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York Chapter of the National MS Society, and I would like to welcome all of you to the first call in our 2013 Employment Teleconference Series. As Jeremy mentioned, the title is Should I Work From Home or Start My Own Business? We'd like to start off by thanking Robin Kemper for her sponsorship of this series. And joining me as host on the call this evening are Steve Nissen, Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and Christina Forster, Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. Please know that this evening's call will be recorded and available to you at the end of the series. So tonight's topic, Should I Work From Home or Start My Own Business, is really a frequently asked question that we hear from individuals with MS. As our speakers will share with you tonight, there are many things to consider when contemplating either of these options. We hope this evening's programs and the resources we've shared with you will provide you with some insight into what it takes to work at home or start your own business, and hopefully the information will help you when making this decision. Just so that you know, after our speakers have completed their presentations, there will be time for questions. We ask that you please jot down any questions you have during the call so you're prepared to ask them during the Q&A period. And be sure to ask your question completely, as we will be muting your line once your question is asked in order to allow us to get to as many questions as possible. We have close to a couple hundred people on the call this evening, so as you can imagine, we're not going to be able to get to everyone. So at the end of the program, Steve, Christine, and I will give you our contact information, and you can forward any additional or unanswered questions to us, and we'll do our best to get them answered. At the conclusion of tonight's call, we will also be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate this program. This is a very short survey of only 6 questions, so if possible, please stay on the line until the conclusion of the program to answer the questions, as we really appreciate and are interested in your feedback. So our first speaker is Michael Herron. Michael's the co-author of 2 best-selling guides to home-based careers, The 2-Second Commute and Work at Home Now. He is the co-director of RatRaceRebellion.com, a popular free website that has listed over 20,000 home-based jobs. He appears often in the media, including CNN, The Wall Street Journal, ABC's 2020, Business Week, and many more. His syndicated column on working from home appears weekly in the Dallas Morning News and other outlets. Michael is a wealth of information on home-based employment, and we are delighted he's here joining us tonight to talk about making the decision to work from home. So welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Barbara. It's a pleasure to be here this evening, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. I've been in the virtual work arena now since about 1999, which is, I suppose, going on 14 years. So I've seen a lot of developments over the years. And I think, in short, it's a very good time to be looking for work from home. There are a lot more options today than there were just a few years ago. Much of it has been fueled by the penetration of broadband internet across the U.S. and also employers waking up to the advantages of having a home-based workforce. And the iPad and smartphones and so on are also fueling the trend. So it's a very good time to be looking for these jobs, and there's a lot more to choose from today than there was up until fairly recently. And I'll be going into those opportunities in more detail shortly. I just wanted to give you an overview of what's going on in the work-at-home arena. We've been operating RatRaceRebellion.com since 2007. We launched that website then in response to the demand for screened work-at-home jobs. There's a very high scam ratio, as many of you may know, among work-at-home job leads on the net. There's a 61-to-1 scam ratio, in fact. So that when you go on Google or other search engines and you look for these jobs, the chances are very high that the first things you're going to see are scams, and we're going to go into those later on. But we knew that there was a very high demand for legitimate jobs, and so we decided to screen these ourselves and post them on the website. And that was the genesis of RatRaceRebellion.com. And since then, as Barbara mentioned, we've posted over 20,000 screened work-at-home jobs. And these represent over 200,000 positions, because many of the job leads are for multiple positions. Some of them, in fact, are for thousands of positions. And so it does represent a lot of opportunity for people who want to work from home. The advantages are, I think, pretty well known, and they're fairly commonsensical. And we'll be going into those in more detail, too, on both sides of as we talk about home-based businesses, too, I think. But you'll be able to save on wardrobe, for example. You don't have to spend a lot of money to dress up to go into the office, although I don't recommend working in PJs. That often puts people in a lazy frame of mind. But you don't have to dress up as you would to go into the cube. You can save on transportation. You don't have to deal with transportation, which is nice. I work from home in Northern Virginia, and getting out on the Beltway and driving even a few miles is often problematic. I've spent hours on the Beltway trying to get to just a local destination, so I'm thankful every day that I can work from a home office. You can spend more time with your family. I routinely break away from my home office to pick up my daughter at school, for example, and she comes home and she's working on her homework, and I go back to work. So there's a lot of flexibility, and yet we do get to spend more time together than we would in a conventional commuter situation. Some of the cons I'm also familiar with, I think one that I really would like to emphasize is a sense of isolation that sometimes home-based workers can fall prey to. And so you have to make a conscious effort to get out and to mingle, or go to your local cafe, or to build friendships online. That isn't so much an issue for me anymore. One reason is that we have a 6,500 Facebook page community, and I'm over there a lot, not just socializing, but answering questions about work from home. So my situation is a little bit atypical. But I think for many home-based workers, the sense of isolation is at times something that they have to contend with. So I want you to keep that in mind. And also, when you're working from home, you are out of sight and out of mind where the office is concerned, the conventional office. So, you know, you're not there to, build your alliance with your supervisor, for example, which is much easier to do face-to-face than it is virtually. You're not there to pick up juicy rumors that can be quite useful that you might pick up at the water cooler, for example, or from a friend at the workstation next to you. And you don't have face-to-face networking opportunities, which, you know, commuters do when they drive into the office. And also, I think it's worth emphasizing that in the States anyway, much of our social lives take place at work. And so we celebrate marriages, we celebrate baptisms and bar mitzvahs, and just about everything is noted and often celebrated in the workspace. And so you have to find substitutes for that when you're working from home. I always think that the perfect situation is a hybrid, where you're working from home and then occasionally you're going into an on-site destination. That can be a headquarters, or it can also be a co-working center, which I'll talk about later. But there are these third places that are also popping up called co-working centers, and they're becoming quite popular, and they represent a place where home-based workers can go to socialize and build business relationships and so on. But I'll mention them later in my talk. And morale can also flag when you're working at home. You don't have someone next door to give you the rah-rah speech and crack the whip, and you don't have meetings, you know, where esprit de corps is built and motivation is built and so on. So you have to be mindful of these things and sort of, prod yourself regularly and get in the habit of being self-actualizing when you're working from home to get things done and so on. And as I mentioned, there's a 61 to 1 scam ratio among work-at-home jobs. So when you look for these jobs, if you're not on guard and you don't know what to look for, you can often land in the clutches of con artists, and that can be catastrophic. And I'll talk about some of their shenanigans and how to spot them later on. I want to briefly give you an overview of the Workscape, the types of jobs and freelance projects and so on that are out there. I think one of the most common categories of home-based jobs that we're seeing now is customer service. A lot of companies are bringing their jobs back from offshore. This is called the home shoring movement. They found that there were cultural conflicts when customers were on the phone with offshore workers, and there was a customer backlash, and companies were trying to figure out how to solve this. And they realized that if they brought these jobs back to the U.S. and actually literally sent them home to home-based workers, they would reap several benefits. And among them is increased productivity. Home-based workers, home-based customer service agents, and workers generally are shown to be more productive than their cube-based counterparts. They are more loyal, which results in less turnover for the employer. And they simply work harder, and they're also willing to put in extra hours where necessary, and they also help reduce the commercial costs of the employer, which can be significant. So, and there's also, of course, a green benefit, which is not as pressing now as it may be in a few years, but it's something that people are more and more mindful of. And so, when you have folks working from home, there are a lot of green carbon savings as well. And these benefits have been documented in many studies by Cisco, by Dell, by other large corporations, and they're very well established. So we're seeing a lot of these. So we're seeing a lot of jobs coming back to the States in what's called the home shoring movement, and these are customer service jobs. This is not telemarketing. These are inbound calls, and employers include American Express, Apple, Xerox, U-Haul. We've identified over 85 of these employers who are hiring home-based customer service agents. They can pay up to $30,000 to $35,000 a year. Many of them offer full benefits, 401ks, and the rest. So these are pretty good positions, and they also go quite rapidly when we post them on Rat Race Rebellion and when they pop up elsewhere. Another sector that's growing rapidly is teaching. Schools are finding that schools and also private schools, not just public schools, but private schools, are finding that many teachers would like to work from home. Who can blame them? Many students can also learn online, and so we're seeing more and more jobs for teachers and also tutors popping up. And many of these are, you'll find these at ConnectionsAcademy.com. That's one of the websites where you'll find many of these jobs, and also tutors.com. We're seeing seasonal work is coming online. Whenever there's a holiday rush, for example, particularly in customer service, we see a lot of seasonal work popping up. And so these jobs come and go very quickly. 1-800-Flowers is a famous employer of seasonal workers, home-based workers, and folks are taking orders over the phone. And these jobs might last for a month or two, but it's also it's a chance to demonstrate your expertise for the employer. These jobs can lead to permanent positions. They also look good on the resume and so on. So we would encourage you to keep an eye out for those. VIPDesk.com also hires seasonally as well as permanently. They hire customer service agents and concierges. LiveOps.com also features a lot of similar home-based jobs. Freelance projects are also very popular. We see them almost every day. And they include writing, editing, blogging, translating, web design. They run the gamut. And we expect to see more and more freelancing positions or projects pop up as time goes on. There's a lot of pressure on the conventional Form 1040 job, the 40-hour-a-week position that our parents perhaps were used to. Those jobs are gradually disappearing. They're being reduced by a number of factors. They're subject to pressures from abroad, global competition. Companies are discovering that it's cheaper to use a contingent workforce than to use a permanent workforce. With freelancing providers or freelancers, companies can often forego benefits, which, you know, for the freelancers is not necessarily a good thing, but the employers find that very advantageous. So we see more and more, not only do we see more freelancing projects coming online, but we expect that trend to continue. So we would encourage you to develop a mindset that prepares you for the world of freelancing as opposed to the world of reliable Form 1040 work. We're also seeing a lot of paper tasks coming online. Those don't pay as well. Those pay less. You might be, for example, doing things that a computer can't do. And so you might identify the color of a sweater in a picture. You might be helping build a very small section of a database. You might be, there are a variety of things that might be done by task workers, but typically that's really piecework, and it doesn't pay very well. In fact, it can pay as little as, 10 cents a task. But some folks find that if they do enough of these things at the end of the month, it can be a beneficial add-on. So we often mention those as well. People are doing website testing now. There's a company called usertesting.com that employs home-based website testers where you can review a website and record your impressions of the website, and you're paid about $10 for maybe a 20-minute review. So we're seeing those jobs as well. Q&A with the public where you're answering miscellaneous questions from the public and getting paid a dollar or two for the answer. Those jobs are available at ChaCha.com. And we're also seeing more and more errand running coming online. These are very short-term assignments that might range from picking up someone's dry cleaning to walking the dog to doing a very brief word processing project. And you'll find those positions or tasks at TaskRabbit.com. We're also seeing more virtual assistant jobs coming online. Those can be either employment or freelancing. We're very familiar with the virtual assistant field. In fact, we wrote one of the first manuals for virtual assistants. And the virtual assistant industry just received a boost when venture capitalists got involved in a company called Zirtual, and that's Zirtual. And Zirtual is based in San Francisco and Las Vegas, and they've hired over 100 home-based virtual assistants. And they just received $2 million to grow their company, and so they are recruiting as well. And you'll find more about those positions at Zirtual.com. Where to search for home-based jobs, in addition to our own site, where we post fresh job leads daily, I would encourage you to go to Indeed.com, which we often visit, and use their advanced search function, their advanced job search function, where you can enter various parameters. So you can limit your search. You can search with the phrase work from home or work at home using the advanced search function. You can rule out job placement agencies and go directly to employer pages. So you skip job placement agencies, which aren't always necessarily real jobs. Sometimes those are phantom jobs just to get resumes. Not always, but sometimes. And so you can set the parameters at Indeed.com to search employer pages only. You can search for jobs that have appeared in the past 3 days or 7 days or 15 days or whatever within, X miles of your home or within, any number of miles of your home and other fields that you can use when you're there. Similarly, for simplyhired.com, basically ditto to what I just said, using their advanced search option. When you do this, you won't necessarily rule out scams. You may find some scams. Sometimes the scammers, breach the system, and they do get in there, and they do sprinkle their mischief in between the legitimate leads. So you'll have to keep your guard up, even though you're using these established search aggregators, job aggregators, as we call them. You can also go to specialized job boards like journalismjobs.com, which, as the name indicates, is for folks who are interested in writing or have journalism experience. And if you're interested in blogging, which is also a growing sector, you can go to problogger.net, where they have a job board, and bloggingpro.com, which also has a job board. And almost all those jobs are legitimate. So I can't guarantee them. We can't guarantee any job that appears online, but any more than the New York Times would guarantee a job that appears in its Help Wanted section. But if you go to those sites, ProBlogger and BloggingPro, you're more likely than not to encounter legitimate jobs. Same thing for AuthenticJobs.com if you're interested in tech-related jobs. And the tech field is very big. Website design, graphic designers, database managers, all the so-called geeky things, those are very popular. They're often work from anywhere. And you'll find those at AuthenticJobs.com and also at Dice.com, as in roll the dice. When you're using Google, I can give you some good search terms and bad search terms. It makes all the difference what type of search terms you're using when you use the search engines. And so if you enter, for example, you know, these are on your handout. If you enter must-have home office or must-have quiet home office and phrases like this in quotes, what you're doing in effect is using phrases that typically pop up in legitimate work-at-home leads. And so these phrases will lead you to those leads. Now, not unerringly. Sometimes the scams will get mixed in because the scammers know, too, what the HR folks, the phrasing that the HR folks are using. And so the scammers will often mirror that phrasing to infiltrate the legitimate, jobs. And so using these phrases won't guarantee that your leads will be legitimate, but it does help reduce the number of bad apples in the barrel. Bad search phrases include work from home, work at home, home employment, and home opportunity, that sort of thing. Those phrases are almost guaranteed to bring up a large number of scams, in which case you're going to be spending most of your time trying to, winnow down the bad ones and get to the needles in the haystack. So we don't recommend those phrases. I'll spend a moment on how to spot scams. After a while, you'll get the hang of it. They're not that hard to spot. I think in the 6 years now that we've been posting jobs at Rat Race Rebellion, one scam has gotten by us. I'm not proud of it, but at least it's only one. And that was a pretty sophisticated one. But we've seen scammers go to great lengths to fool the public, fool job seekers. We've even seen them copy legitimate websites, corporate websites, wholesale, everything on the website. The only thing that they change is the links. We've seen corporate bios, corporate photographs, faces of CEOs and CFOs and COOs and all this stuff will show up. It will look exactly like a legitimate corporate site with, employment and everything else featured on it, and the darn thing is a scam. And so they do get awfully wily. But if you see offers of high pay for little work, for example, which is almost always a giveaway, no experience necessary, where this is trumpeted on the ad, where you see gaudy signs of success, which we call beaches, bikinis, and Benjamins, and Benjamins are referring to the $100 bills fanned out across the page. Those are dead giveaways. An ugly guy sitting in a beach shirt with a little parasol sitting on his drink and three beautiful women in bikinis behind him with an enormous mansion and a Ferrari parked next to him, that's probably not going to be a legitimate job. You'll often see what we call testifonials, and these are bogus testimonials for an opportunity or a job, and those often feature generic names. And so, Joe Smith, just taking one example, endorses this, had a magnificent experience working for this company. Often these are generic names, and the testimonials themselves will sound generic because the scammers are trying to net as many people as possible. Late night infomercials, which you'll see which I'm sure many of you have probably seen, where a book is being advertised, for example, how to make money with e-commerce websites. That's a classic. And so you pay shipping and handling on this book, and you think you've got something great, a great asset or a resource. A couple of days later, your phone will ring, and it will be a high-pressure salesman on the phone calling from a boiler room to talk you into buying coaching sessions for as much as $15,000 to help you maximize your $4.95 investment in the book and get as much out of that e-commerce website as possible. And these things can be catastrophic. Boiler room people are often on drugs. They will keep you on the phone for 3 hours. We've investigated these things for 2020, and we put in a lot of hours investigating things, so I know whereof I speak. And a lot of the boiler rooms are located here in the States. They'll get you on the phone, and they won't let you go, and they'll keep calling back. So please be careful when you're looking at late-night infomercials. Rebate processing, mystery shopping with cashier's checks, and wire transfers with mystery shopping, and merchandise reshipping leads are also often bogus. And that's, I'm wrapping it up. We covered a lot of ground in 20 minutes, but that's all I have as an introduction, and I hope I've given you something you can work with. And I'll just hand it back over to Barb.
Great. Thanks so much, Michael. And I know there will be questions after, so I'm just going to move on to our next speaker, who's going to talk more about those who are interested in perhaps starting their own business. And our next speaker is Dr. Kim Cordingley, and she's a lead consultant with the Job Accommodation Network, otherwise known as JAN, which is a free national consulting service which is funded by the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Disability Employment Policy. Kim oversees JAN's self-employment team, which provides individualized technical assistance to individuals with disabilities exploring small business ownership. Kim completed her PhD in human geography at West Virginia University in 2007 with research interests in disability employment policy, women in chronic illness, economic and community development, and technology and work. She's now in her 27th year working at JAN, and we're thrilled to have her here tonight. So welcome, Kim.
Thank you very much, Barbara and Steve. And thank you very much for asking us to participate in this teleconference. I've been asked to really talk about some key considerations in the decision to start a small business. This is something I've been doing for some time while I've been working at JAN, so I hope I can give you some good tips as you're kind of going through this decision-making process. We also get lots of calls from individuals who are wanting to work from home, and working from home can include starting a home-based business. That certainly is one of the options. I just wanted to talk a little bit more about what we do. As Barbara mentioned, JAN's a free service of the Office of Disability Employment Policy of the Department of Labor, and we actually can answer a range of questions about workplace accommodation issues, the Americans with Disabilities Act and the ADA Amendments Act, and then we can answer questions about self-employment and starting a small business. The reason I mentioned the workplace accommodation piece is that sometimes comes into consideration when you're talking about starting a small business. We often hear from callers that that the accommodation piece is something that's making them lean a little bit towards looking at that self-employment option. JAN services are available free of charge. We're available through a toll-free phone line, through an online chat service. We can be accessed through email and through social media. And just to get an idea, we receive about 40,000 contacts per year, and our website has about 3.5 million web page requests per year. The team that I am the lead consultant for, we have a process that's a little bit different in terms of how we handle questions. Typically what happens is that we will do an intake process from our callers and get some information from them about what they're wanting to do, what organizations they're currently working with, just kind of to get a profile of what they are interested in doing. And I just want to really emphasize that when you contact us, you do not have to have a sophisticated business idea. You don't have to have developed a business plan. You really can be at the very beginning stages of considering this option. One of the things that I think we can really effectively do is give our callers a really good overview of what's available out there to support you in this decision to start your own business. We also have a section of the JAN website that covers these topics. And I also want to mention that we work primarily with individuals starting for-profit businesses, but we also can address questions if someone's interested in starting a nonprofit, different kinds of customized employment situations, and, of course, kind of telework situations, which can include self-employment. One thing I wanted to briefly talk about is just definitions, because I think we sometimes assume we know what we mean when we say small business, entrepreneurship, microenterprise. So typically when we're talking about a small business, the Small Business Administration defines that as something, as a business that's owned independently and operated and organized for profit and is not dominant in its field. And that can vary a lot based on different industries. Most of our callers are looking at starting very small businesses, we would consider to be micro businesses. And those are usually businesses that are started under $35,000 and have less than 5 employees. In fact, most of our callers are looking at self-employment, which really is an individual who is the sole owner of their business and working for themselves. We also get questions about independent contracting, which can be a different kind of self-employment where someone is contracting their services to, could be a different employer. There are different types of relationship, but there's a lot less control in terms of the work process and more focus on the result of the work that's being done. And then the term entrepreneurship really is a broader term. It's used often to talk about people starting new ventures. I think during the whole presidential election, we heard entrepreneur over and over again as this kind of idealized image of someone who's an innovator. But it's really talking about anybody who's really interested in starting something new, and usually that's a venture that they're referring to. And all of these terms can refer to someone who's doing something from home. Home-based business really talks about, it's thinking about the location in which that business is taking place. And I just briefly want to give a little overview of the significance of small business in the overall employment picture in the U.S. In 2009, 1 in 9 workers in the United States was self-employed. Small businesses employ half of all private sector employees. They pay 44% of total U.S. private payroll. And I actually saw this in an email I received today from the Small Business Administration that said an estimated 14.4 million, or 52% of America's 27.8 million small businesses are home-based businesses. And then this is really significant because the rate of self-employment for people with disabilities in the labor force in 2010 was about 50% higher than the corresponding rate for people without disabilities. So this is something that's very important to the economy and something that people are very interested in doing. So I want to briefly just talk about some of the pros and cons or advantages and challenges to starting a small business. The advantages that most people think about are that it's a real customized approach. When you're developing your own business idea, you have a lot of control over a number of issues. And if you're thinking about different accommodation options, this can be very empowering to be able to build those accommodation options into the design of your business. There are also, if you're receiving Social Security, Medicaid, other types of income supports, there are advantages through work incentives if you're doing self-employment versus wage and salary employment, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. These types of businesses can be started as part-time and developed into a full-time business over time. Michael mentioned that there can be real advantages to transportation or commuting issues. Certainly, if you're starting a home-based business, that can be really labor-intensive, just getting just having the commute to work. It also allows for a lot of flexibility and autonomy in terms of the work process. Certainly, if you have your own business, you can choose the hours that you're working. You can build the business around other activities like caring for children, other caregiving activities that individuals are doing. We hear from a lot of our callers that it really fulfills a lifelong dream or a lifelong interest that they've had to start their own business. We have people who have contacted us who kind of on the side had been baking for a number of years, and they really are seeing this as an opportunity to take that to the next level and develop it into a profitable business. For some of our callers, this the ability to start a business really enables them to continue in their chosen field of work. One example that comes to mind is we've heard from a number of individuals in the nursing field who no longer can really work in certain types of environments, and they've taken that all those skills and knowledge over a number of years and kind of translated those into a small business. One person chose to do a staffing service. Another was doing kind of more individualized caregiving. So it's a way to really translate that into something different, but still using the skills that you have developed over your years in the workforce. And often, home-based businesses have lower startup and operating costs, so it can be a much more doable option. However, there are a number of challenges. I guess our number one question is how do I fund a small business? So certainly there are funding challenges, and that's something that we can address here at JAN and work with people to really get a good overview of what some of those options are and how to put together the funding to be able to start the business. There also are still some attitudinal barriers, both on the sides of disability organizations who haven't really gotten on board with the belief that self-employment can be a viable option. And on the small business side, a lot of those organizations maybe haven't had a lot of exposure to certain disability-related concerns, like accommodations or individuals who are receiving Social Security or other types of support. So there needs to be some education process at that point. Another issue and challenge can be determining the feasibility of your business. We do have lots of individuals who have great business ideas, but the feasibility issue really needs to be teased out, so that can be a challenge. There are some policy disincentives built into certain systems that can make it difficult to start a small business or challenging. It's not difficult, but I think a lot of those policies have begun to evolve so that when we're talking about the different employment options for people with disabilities, that small business development is becoming more and more viewed as a very positive and viable alternative. There are also issues around health insurance, any kind of transition from one type of employment to another involves a real need to really look at these issues carefully to help with that decision-making process. And one more thing I wanted to add is that in each of the areas when you're developing your business as an individual who may be involved with different types of disability support programs, a lot of these different areas have different languages that they use in terms of talking about things. Economic development groups use one kind of way of talking about development. Vocational rehabilitation services, for example, has a way of talking about self-employment and employment. And sometimes these languages do not cross over very easily, so it's really important to get an idea of how to talk about these issues in these different kinds of environments. I wanted to talk about just the process of starting a business. There's a lot, you all have probably seen, there's a lot of personal inventory assessments and surveys. You know, are you ready to start a business? Are you the type of personality to start a business? And these can be really distracting. They really focus on the individual and that being the point at which you decide if I'm the person, if this is going to be the right alternative for me. What we found is that with the right supports, a lot of different types of individuals can be very successful at starting a small business. Asking yourself if you're a self-starter, I don't know how helpful that. I don't even know if I could say I was a self-starter, but I've accomplished some things in my life. I don't know how I would answer that question, but I would just caution you to kind of look beyond those initial kinds of questionnaires or ways of kind of figuring out if I'm going to start a small business. In fact, I would argue, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit, that you really need to begin to get into the process before you're able to really make this decision. And again, that's something that we can work with you with if you decide to really look into this further. At JAN, we really will get those initial resources to you and talk to you throughout the process and really help kind of direct through those kinds of questions. So one thing I wanted to talk about specifically are just some strategies to address these kinds of questions so that you really can come to a point where you can make that decision about whether this is going to be the best option for you. So when you're looking at benefits and income supports, one of the most important things is to identify individuals who have that expertise to really understand those rules and regulations and really help you work through kind of a benefits planning process. Not only that, you need somebody who really understands the self-employment part of it, and that's something that we can help with. We can try to get you to those kind of specialized kinds of individuals who can help with that process. You know, there's often this focus, again, on this assessment process, personal attributes. Owning a business really isn't for everyone, but there are a lot of supports out there that can make it very viable. And just because there are areas where there might be certain difficulties doesn't mean you shouldn't pursue. At least look into whether that's going to be a good option. As I said, the accommodation piece can be very empowering, and it's really there are ways to really identify various accommodations that can be built into the design of your business. That's something that Jan can help with. We often get calls that start out as self-employment calls that then turn into accommodation questions, and we can really help with that piece of it. Also, disability support programs are there for you, and they, through the Rehabilitation Act, certainly can assist with self-employment. Different states, different counselors have different levels of experience in assisting people, but each state usually has a set of regulations that are available that talk about what their plan is for how they would assist someone with self-employment, and it's really important to have knowledge of what those regulations say, to be able to go to a counselor with a kind of real informed view about you know, what they can or can't do, and to find out from them how they can help you. Often we have callers who are feeling that they don't have the skills. There's an area of deficit, probably the wrong word, but they just don't have, like, accounting skills, for example. And, you know, things that should not be a reason to kind of weed out the option of starting a small business, because nobody has all of these skills. There are lots of ways to either have different training so that you can do a certain portion of it, or often individuals hire an accountant or hire someone to do a particular part of that business. So there are lots of strategies for kind of making up for some of those kinds of issues. Those are the kind of the personal considerations. Now I want to briefly, I'm kind of running short on time, so I want to talk about some of the small business considerations. Because the key part of this is that having a good business idea is one of the most important parts of this. Often there's been a kind of push towards, you know, pick something that's your passion, find something that you love doing, and that can be a way to develop a certain business idea. Others will really talk about, well, you know, if you live in a community that needs a bakery, you know, obviously a bakery might be something that would be more viable. So when you're going through the process of figuring out whether a small business is going to be a good option, you really have to go through a certain level of feasibility. You have to research things. You have to test out your ideas. There are ways to there are lots of guidelines to help with this process. Certainly business plans, although people hate them, part of the good thing about business plans is they kind of force a process that I think is really essential if you're looking at starting a business. And I don't think the document of the business plan, even though it's often required, is the important part of it. The important part, I think, is the process it puts an individual through in terms of working out ideas. The next thing I would say is that it's very important in terms of the business to put together a support team and a network, because not one organization or one person has all these areas of expertise to help guide you or support you in this process. So we really kind of advocate a team approach, so you have someone who has benefits planning experience. You might have someone who you've worked with as a vocational or employment counselor. You may be talking to someone at a women's business center, and that person as kind of a mentoring kind of role in your life. So that would be somebody that you would include. And you would find a way to at least kind of at times bring these groups together so that they're talking to one another. And I just want to emphasize that we can really help you put together that team. We can put together very specific information for you to kind of identify those types of resources. So the three key tips in this very, I feel like I just rushed through a whole bunch of information, but three key tips I would leave you with is that this is a process, and I really think that it's important to, if you're thinking about this seriously as an option, to really do a lot of that front-end work, to really work out what a business idea would look like on paper, or to really tease out a lot of these questions. Work on a business feasibility study doesn't have to be a document. It can be a matter of interviewing people, talking to other people who have done similar types of businesses. But to really go a little bit further than you probably would want to, well, here's what I'll say. People often want to know the money is going to be there at the end before they put all this time in. But I would just say that if you're really looking at this, it's important to put that front-end time in. The other thing I would emphasize is that self-employment doesn't mean that you're working alone, and no one knows how to do everything, and the key is to establish these network of supports. And again, don't opt out because there's one area that concerns you, that you feel like, you know, I wouldn't be really good at this, I'm not very good at this piece of it, I don't know how I would bridge that. There are often lots of ways to bridge that, and I would just keep that in mind when considering the option. And the last thing I would say is that self-employment and small business ownership can be a very viable option. We've worked with people to start all different types of businesses, from accounting services to clothing designers, farmers, florists, financial planners, musicians. We've had people start bookstores. We've worked with people to do a whole range of different types of businesses. So If you're really interested in this, please contact us, and we'd be happy to help you. Thank you. I'll turn it over to Barbara.
Thanks so much, Kim. That was a ton of information, I know, in such a short period of time from both you and Michael. So I think we have a few minutes left, and I want to open it up to some questions. So, Jeremy, if you could let people know how to ask, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, to ask a question, press the number 1 key on your phone. The first question is from Kathy. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for your presentations. My question is in regard to many people have self-employment or small business ideas, but the thing that they're lacking and is the biggest challenge to success is marketing their product. So they may have a great product or a great service, but they're not a salesperson, so they don't know where to begin marketing their business. How do you get around that?
Okay. Well, we do get this question often. The first thing I would say is that it depends, obviously, on the product and service. We work with people to kind of look at the range of marketing options, and because I'm often working with individuals who don't have a lot of capital to put towards marketing, we try to come up with some innovative ways that you might want to market your product or service. For example, social media really is an incredibly resourceful tool to use when marketing certain types of products and services. There's a woman who I use her as an example with a lot of our callers that started out writing a blog about making healthy children's recipes that are vegan. She just started this blog because she really wanted to share what she was doing with her child. Well, she used that. It ended up turning into a cookbook. The blog and the cookbook then worked together. There were different venues that she linked with that enabled her to sell that product. She linked up with other companies who advertised on her blog and created this kind of whole marketing community. So I guess what I would say is that I would work with any caller individually to try to come up with some kinds of strategies. Also, we would try to link you up with local and state programs that can help with that as well. There are lots of individuals who can work as business mentors who can help you come up with a marketing plan.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay, the next question is from Cynthia. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this for us because it was very informative. But this question is from Michael. Because I'm a criminal justice major, so I want to get back into the legal profession because right now I'm working in the school district, school sector, and
uh-huh.
I want to get back into the legal profession because my degree is in criminal justice. And I
okay.
want to know, but I want to work from home, though. Is there, do they have some stuff like that, something working from home, dealing in the legal profession? That's my question.
Okay, Cynthia. The good news is that, well, there isn't a lot of good news. I used to be a lawyer, and the law firms themselves have been very slow to adopt telework, virtual work, and so on. However, that doesn't rule out all options. I rarely see jobs for in the criminal justice field, but that doesn't mean you can't approach companies directly yourself. Most jobs, as other experts will tell you, are not advertised, and so I would encourage you to identify those companies you'd like to work for or those organizations you'd like to work for and approach them directly. But chances are you're not going to find very many legitimate criminal justice jobs pop up. I mean, you can start a blog, you can go the independent route and do that sort of thing. But if you want a regular job, a reliable job, you're probably going to have to approach the employers yourself.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, and the next question is from Adrian. Please go ahead.
Oh, hello. I was very informative, but I was just wondering, this question is for Mike. You said when you search that not to search work from home, I always tend to do that. What are the things that you should search for?
The search phrases you should use?
Yeah.
Well, some of them, some examples are must have a home office, in quotes, because that tells the search engine to search for that phrase in particular. So you want to put quotes around these phrases. Must have home office, must have quiet home office. And fortunately, this is going to be taped, so you can listen to the tape and listen again to what I'm sharing. This is a 1099 position, and that would turn up freelancing positions because Form 1099 is a freelance IRS form. Must be willing to work from home. That's another one. You'll find others on our website, on the RatRaceRebellion.com website, over on the left of the homepage. Just look for, great Google search terms.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
The next question is from James. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was trying to make sure I got this right. Michael, you're RatRaceRebellion.com?
That's it, James. Yep.
All right. And then, Dr. Kim, how do I get a hold of you if I need to?
We're at the Job Accommodation Network, and our website is askjan.org. So it's askjan.org.
JANS.com?
It's J as in Joy, A-N as in Nancy. So it's askjan.org.
Okay, thank you. Next question, Jeremy?
Okay, the next question is from Maxine. Please go ahead.
Hi, my question actually was answered, so I pass.
Okay, the next question will be from Paula. Please go ahead.
Yes, this question is for Michael. I have a lot of medical data entry experience, so
uh-huh.
when I search the search engine, like I like to work for like a doctor or a medical office or a hospital, And I don't know if they put their transcription outside sources or, like, how would I go about searching for a job like that?
Well, Paula, if you have experience in medical transcription, you're in luck because there's a huge demand for those folks, and a lot of those jobs are home-based. So a couple of places, since our website is free, I can plug it again. If you go to the medical transcription and coding, at least I hope I can plug it again, if you go to the medical transcription and coding page at ratracerebellion.com, you'll find, oh gosh, I don't know, there must be 30 or 40 companies listed on that page. And when you go to our website, everyone who's going to go to ratracerebellion.com, start at the FAQ page, the FAQ page, and then go on from there. But, Paula, you'll find a lot of medical transcription jobs through the links on that medical transcription and coding page. And also, if you go to mtjobs.com, you'll find others. So that's Amazon Medical, T as in Transcription, jobs.com.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
Uh-huh.
Next question, Jeremy.
The next question will be from Kathy. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you both for taking your time out. I obviously currently have MS and fibromyalgia. I am time. So my question is, if you're on disability, can you still do a work program and not lose your benefits?
I'm going to jump in here on that one, Kathy, because that's more of a benefits question. And we're going to give our contact information later at the end in a couple minutes. And you can contact me, and I can send you some great information on how to know what you can earn while you're still on benefits and all the information you need to know about that.
And it might be a good opportunity, Barbara, to plug the call that we're doing on
On February
the 27th on work-from-home options for people that are receiving a Social Security disability.
Right, that's right. That's the 27th. Mm-hmm. I think we have time for one more call, one more question, I should say.
Okay. The last question is from Leah. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. So I'm a graphic designer. I currently have a full-time job, but my commute is killing me. I want to switch. So I'm having a hard time figuring out how to choose between the options of starting my own business versus freelancing versus working from home versus being an independent contractor. I'm also afraid of losing my benefits. How do I combat these fears and figure out how to choose the best next step for me?
You guys want to handle that one?
Sure. I'll be happy to jump in just for a moment. You might consider, and I'm, you know, Kim will have her own take on this, but I would suggest that you consider doing a transition where you take on some graphic design jobs from home, freelance jobs, which are pretty, they're fairly easy to find online. The graphic designers are in pretty high demand. And so if you go to AuthenticJobs.com or you go to Dice.com or Odesk.com, you'll probably find, if you search, you'll find some freelance graphic designer jobs and then or assignments. And then you can you know, sort of test the waters, see what it's like, and see if that's for you. I can't respond to the benefits question, but that's one way that you might transition. Kim will have her own take on this, and I'll turn it over to her for that.
I think that's a really great suggestion, and I think when I was talking about testing your idea, that's partly what I mean, is that if you're thinking of doing a certain, doing any type of business, to be able to begin to do it, even if you're volunteering or you're doing it, you know, freelancing, doing a little bit of that, just to kind of get an idea about what is going to work for you, that's a really, really important step. In terms of the benefits, I would just say that obviously Barbara mentioned that you all have a lot of great information about that, and I can provide some more specific information about that in terms of self-employment. So if you would email or call, I'd be glad to put together that information for you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Kim, for all of your wonderful information this evening. I'm sure there's tons more questions out there. So we are at the top of the hour. We do have to wrap up. I want to give you our contact information so that you can send your questions to either Steve, Christina, or myself, and we will make sure that you get an answer. Also, I want to point out to you that we did send links in the materials that were sent out ahead of time. So again, if you didn't get the materials for some reason, sometimes it goes into spam, please contact one of us, and we'll make sure that you get the materials. And the links in there, particularly the one on home-based employment or the one on starting your own business, the one on starting your own business does have information in there about benefits for people who are self-employed. So, Leah, that may address a little bit more of your question. I'm going to give out my contact information. My email address is B as in Barbara, M as in Mary, C-K-E-O-N, that's B McKeon at msnyc.org. Steve?
Sure. My email address is steve.nissen. It's N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N, at nmss.org. And phone number is 202-296-5363.
Christina?
My contact information is christina.forster, that's C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A, dot Forster, F as in Frank, O-R, F as in Sam, T-E-R, at nmss.org, and the phone number is 215-271-1500.
Okay, at this point in time, we want to thank you all for listening, but please don't hang up. We have a quick survey of six questions that Jeremy's going to guide you through, tell you how to answer them by pressing on your phone. So we thank you for listening in. Please check in to the other calls that we have coming up in the teleconference series. As Steve mentioned, there's another one on home-based employment coming up on the 27th of February. We hope to have you all on that call as well, and I hope you all have a good evening. Jeremy?
Okay, thanks, Barbara. Please remain on the line, everyone, for a quick polling session. And for the first question, you can press 1 for yes or 2 for no. The first question is, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Are you currently working? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Okay, polling is closed for this question. Please remain on the line for the next question. Okay, for the next question, how would you rate the speakers? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. How would you rate the speakers? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. Okay, polling is closed for this question. Please remain on the line for the next question. Okay, for the next question, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. How would you rate the content of the program? 1 for excellent, 2 for good, 3 for fair, or 4 for poor. Okay, polling is closed for this question. Please remain on the line for the next question. Okay, for each of the following questions, please answer one if you strongly please answer one if you strongly agree, two if you agree, three if you agree somewhat, four if you disagree, or five if you strongly disagree. For the question, as a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of what I need to think about if I want to work from home. Press 1 to strongly agree, 2 to agree, 3 to agree somewhat, 4 to disagree, or 5 to strongly disagree. Okay, polling is closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare the next question. Okay, for the next question, as a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of what I need to think about if I want to start my own business. Press 1 if you strongly agree, 2 to agree, 3 to agree somewhat, 4 to disagree, or 5 to strongly disagree. 1 to strongly agree, 2 to agree, 3 to agree somewhat, 4 to disagree, and 5 to strongly disagree. Again, that question was, as a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of what I need to think about if I want to start my own business. Okay, polling is closed for this question, and please hold while we prepare the last question. Okay, for the last question, as a result of this teleconference, I have some ideas on how to spot home-based employment scams. Press 1 if you strongly agree, 2 to agree, 3 to agree somewhat, 4 to disagree, or 5 to strongly disagree. As a result of this teleconference, I have some ideas on how to spot home-based employment scams. 1 to strongly disagree, 1 to strongly agree, 2 to agree, 3 to agree somewhat, 4 to disagree, and 5 to strongly disagree. Okay, polling is now closed for this question, and that also concludes our polling session. Thank you all for your participation. You may all disconnect.